I had a great gift a couple of weeks ago when I had the chance to be in New York for just 2 days. I was there to see some friends from seminary that I hadn't seen in a very long time, one of whom was gravely ill. And that part was hard and sad, but it was also very good to be together. But the added gift was that I got to stay in the home of one of my very best friends in the world. She's a fellow RCA pastor who I used to walk with every Friday when we both lived in New Jersey. And on those weekly walks, we would solve all the problems of the world. You know those kind. And we were both in need of one of those walks. We got two. For me, it was just after the Summit on Race and Inclusion and the community conversation we had had about a police incident in town. And the tensions had become very, very evident in our community, very polarized, the social media after that had occurred, in the meeting itself. And those tensions surfaced just again this past week in a very constructive environment. It was a meeting called by the head of public safety with some officers and a city government official and some clergy who had raised some concerns. And so Pastor Beth and Gordon and I and some others were able to be there. And it was a very difficult and long conversation, one that is not through. And I have great hope because there's a willingness to keep talking. But when I was on that walk that day, I was feeling very much the urgency of this kind of work. Because if we are to proclaim the peace of Christ and the need to love our neighbor, if we can't put flesh on that in these really hard places, then we are just making a whole lot of noise. For my friend, it was this intersection she deals with between poverty and addiction, mental illness, and homophobia. In her town, that is breaking a whole lot of people who have made their way into the life of their church. And she's trying to figure out how to make some community that provides healing space while going full tilt at the systemic stuff that needs attention at the same time. It's exhausting. We didn't solve a thing, by the way, on our walk. But we did support each other in remembering that there is one who searches and knows the fullness of this all, who hems us in, behind and before, who sees the fullness of our needs as we were walking that morning, and sees all the people whose pain and need was weighing heavy on our heart. It reminded us of the truth of this psalm that we had before us today, that God is. I saw a clip this week by the Reverend Nadia Boltz-Weber. Some of you know her. She's a Lutheran pastor, writer, and author. She's starting a new series, and this was introducing it. And the opening line for the video was, "As a Christian pastor, I'd like to invite you to the apocalypse. Pull up a chair and make yourself uncomfortable." And then she went on to talk about the meaning of the word apocalypse. In Greek, it just simply means to uncover and to reveal. It's like pulling back the facade so that you can see what was always there before, but that people weren't noticing. We have apocalyptic literature in both the Old and New Testament, and Jesus speaks with apocalyptic imagery in the Gospels. And this literature, she said, springs up not to scare people into being good, but for a different purpose altogether. And this is how she put it: for this big, hopeful idea that dominant powers are not ultimate powers. Empires fall, tyrants fade, systems die, and God is still around. As we have a second call story for a prophet today, we heard one from Isaiah last week, Samuel this week, I could not help but think about the way that the gift of the prophets is to do this work of uncovering and revealing. They step into those tumultuous times when people feel overwhelmed by the suffering of the world, and when it feels like the dominant forces are pressing in and people cannot live and you feel scared and you don't know where to turn. Prophets step in to those tumultuous times and they offer up a word from God. And it is a word that can be quite unsettling when you first hear it, as it breaks through the noise and helps us to see what is really going on, what's at the heart of the matter. They help us to hear where God is inviting us to trust and where God is inviting us to move. Now, this call story that we have today is very different from the one last week with Isaiah. Samuel is just a small boy. Kids, start listening right now. I know you're always listening, but really listen now. Samuel is just a small boy living in the temple as an assistant to Eli, the priest at the time. And on one level, this call story is a very sweet story. Here's the line, y'all. It reminds us not to shush children and think that only adults have important things to say. You can thank me later, parents, for that. But it's the second line of this story that really caught my attention. The word of the Lord was rare in those days, and visions were not widespread. Now, Isaiah's call that we heard last week was a vision. And it came to him in a time when prophets were a thing in Israel. But now, for Samuel, we're much earlier in time now, there had not been a word from God in a very long time. Moses was long gone, didn't yet have the kings in Israel, and we did not yet have this idea of prophets who bring the word of God at times of need. It was a very scary time in the life of Israel. There were every once in a while these wise judges that would rise up and give some structure and leadership to the tribes, but once they died, they'd all fall back into chaos again and corruption. If you've ever read the book of Judges, it's a cycle that does not seem to ever end, and it leaves you feeling very hopeless. Now, Eli had some sons who should have been one of those wise, stabilizing forces bringing structure and reminding people about the vision of shalom that God had given to them, this idea of right relationship with each other, where everybody in the community could flourish. But these sons were actually at the very heart of the corruption, and they were the ones who were helping to tear the community apart. And Eli had done nothing to stave off that corruption. So when he became aware that God was going to be speaking for the first time in generations, Eli had every reason to fear the apocalypse that was about to come, because the peeling back to uncover what was really going on was going to expose his family. But he sent Samuel back because he was ready to pull up a chair and get uncomfortable. Unlike the religious leaders in Jesus' day. Now, I actually do, I mean this truly, have empathy for the space that these religious folk were in the time of Jesus. They were living under occupied times. They were feeling the strain of occupation. And there was so much out of their control, so much. So the idea that in their life of faith, they could have a really clear set of rules, assumptions everyone shared, expectations that were clear, so that at least in their life with God, they didn't have to be uncomfortable. I really, truly have empathy for that. They could live in peace in that space, or at least they told themselves that. Until Jesus comes along and he does this work of uncovering. And he revealed what Martin Luther King Jr. exposed in his letter from a Birmingham jail, which is that the peace that they were talking about wasn't a real peace. It certainly wasn't the biblical idea of shalom that I just described a moment before. In Martin Luther King's words, it was a negative peace, a mere absence of discomfort, and nothing more. And actually, as you pull it back further and look more closely, you recognize it wasn't an absence of discomfort for everyone, which was a pretty low bar to begin with, but it was only an absence of discomfort for some of them who were in control, and not for everyone. There was no absence of discomforts for some person who had the misfortune of being hungry or needing to be healed on the Sabbath. But I do understand how unsettling it was. because Jesus was breaking more rules and at a faster pace than they could even keep up with. And I can understand the defensiveness in them that was kind of shouting, "So what do you want from me?" And when you listen to Jesus' life, when you watch his ministry, like in a story like today, what he reveals is really pretty simple when you take back all the excessive baggage. When people are hungry, they need to eat. When people are sick, they need help and healing. You need to love your neighbor the way you love yourself. You need to love your neighbor more than the rules, your actual neighbors. And that's the way and the only way that you can show your love for God. It's the prophets and the poets and the playwrights. They have a way of cutting through all of the layers that obscure us from being able to see what is really at the heart of the matter, helping us to figure out what to trust and where to move. Now, for all of you who are not prophets or poets, please know that creating a community around the heart of the matter in ways that are sustainable and feasible and equitable, that takes the gifts of everybody's intellect, every discipline. It also takes the experience of people from every part of the community who might not even think in terms of disciplines. Everybody has a place at this table and a part of this work. But it does often start with the poets and the prophets who peel back the layers and help us see. And what they help us see is twofold. They help us to see the beauty and the extraordinary power of God that is already here. Those places where God's light is cracking through. The one who hems us in behind and before, and who can shine light from anywhere. They help us know what to trust. And the second part is that they help us know where to move. What are the things that need to change? What should the shape of our resistance be? Is it lawful to do good or to do harm? To save life or kill it? And with that very clear prophetic word, Jesus silenced all their legal hand-wringing. Part of what I discovered on that walk, I've discovered from so many of you, is that sometimes just being able to see where it is that we are going, even if we are not yet there, allows us to breathe a bit more freely and to feel some joy and take delight in the beauty and to be able to keep choosing love. So I have an encouragement for you. It's actually an assignment, if you're willing to accept it, to keep your eyes open for some of these places of beauty. Some of these prophets and poets, and I mean that in the broadest sense, might be a lyric from a song or a piece of art, might be a scene from a play or a section of a speech, any place where you have been helped to know where to trust or where to move. And I literally invite you to share those with me. You can send them by email, you can drop them at the church office. I've got my contribution ready, and then I'll share them with all of you. Because I am convinced of this truth, that there is an extraordinary power that belongs to God. And it is not ours, but it is revealed within us and through us and among us, even if it's through a jar clay that might just be a bit broken. So this is good news for us to share, to hold, and to take with us into the week ahead. Amen.